I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, any day now we're expecting SCOTUS to make decisions on two key cases involving girls' sports. Plus, feds in Seattle arrested four illegal aliens during a crackdown on the sex trade. And Washington's attorney general being criticized for his handling of public records requests, but his office tells us the story is much ado about nothing. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. Hello, hello, and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Some of us were waiting with bated breath this morning, 6:30 a.m., waiting for the United States Supreme Court to issue its rulings in two key cases involving the protection of girls' sports. Supposed to happen earlier this week. Well, there's a possibility, right? You kind of know the days that SCOTUS is going to issue rulings, the potential cases they'll issue rulings on. Didn't happen earlier this week, so we're like, oh, of course it'll happen on Thursday. Didn't happen today. But we do expect it potentially to happen on Monday. And so I want to make sure that we kind of do a review of what these two cases are about and how they may or may not impact what's happening here in Washington state and other blue states that allow boys to compete against girls. So let's go through the two cases just so we all have an understanding of what they are. The first one is West Virginia versus BPJ. So obviously this takes us to West Virginia. And let's talk about the questions that are presented in this case and what the Supreme Court justices are going to weigh. So I'm just going to read directly from the complaint for you. So it says, like everywhere else, West Virginia schools offer separate sports teams for boys and girls. The West Virginia legislature concluded that biological boys should compete on boys and co-ed teams, but not girls' teams. This separation made sense, the legislature found, because of the inherent physical differences between biological males and biological females. A parent sued on behalf of her child, BPJ, arguing that the state must allow biological boys who identify as girls to compete on girls' teams. After extensive discovery, the district court disagreed, entering summary judgment for the state on claims under the Equal Protection Clause in Title IX. Yet a divided Fourth Circuit panel granted an injunction pending appeal. BPJ then beat and displaced hundreds of girls in track and field. Ultimately, the same divided panel ruled in BPJ's favor on the Title IX claim and vacated the district court's judgment for the defendants on the equal protection claim. So essentially, you have this case, you have a state that has decided and tried to protect girls' sports. You have a biological boy who sued the state and wanted to be able to participate. And so the state was taking this case forward to argue that, no, indeed, we have a right as a state to protect girls' sports and to protect girls' spaces. So the two questions presented in this case are as follows. Whether Title IX prevents a state from consistently designating girls' and boys' sports teams based on biological sex determined at birth, and whether the Equal Protection Clause prevents a state from offering separate boys' and girls' sports teams based on biological sex determined at birth. So a little bit different than what's happening here in our state. It's flip-flopped, right? You got a state that wants boys to be able to participate in girls, and you have some girls who are angry about that, who want to challenge that, who want it to be the other way around. So now let's go a little closer to our state, to the state of Idaho. This is the other case being considered by SCOTUS. So this is Bradley Little, who is, of course, the governor of Idaho, versus Lindsay Hecox. This is the questions presented in this case. It says, women and girls have overcome decades of discrimination to achieve a more equal playing field in many arenas of American life, including sports. Yet in some competitions, female athletes have become bystanders in their own sports as male athletes who identify as female have taken the place of their female competitors on the field and on the winner's podium. The Idaho legislature addressed that injustice by enacting the Fairness in Women's Sports Act, which ensures that women and girls do not have to compete against men and boys, no matter how those men and boys identify. The act, one of 25 such state laws around the country, is consistent with longstanding government policies preserving women's and girls' sports due to the average real differences between the sexes. Breaking with this court's precedents, its own case law and other circuit decisions and biological reality, the Ninth Circuit panel here upheld an injunction against the act because it prevents, quote, transgender women and girls, meaning males who identify as women and girls, from competing in women's student athletics. The question presented is whether laws that seek to protect women and girls' sports by limiting participation to women and girls based on sex violate the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment. So you have two cases in two different states, Idaho and West Virginia, with very similar arguments. It's basically, is a state allowed to say boys are girls, or boys, well, that's what our state does, girls are girls, boys are boys, and the Equal Protection Clause and Title IX say that as a state, we can protect girls' sports and can protect girls' spaces. So one of the big pushers of trying to protect girls' sports is a woman named Jennifer Say. You'll be familiar with her. She's been on the show. She is the founder of XXXY Athletics. She was a former gymnast at the highest levels of competition. She, like us, was waiting very patiently for SCOTUS to make a ruling this morning, but I think she laid out very well what the ruling could mean and what it likely will not mean.
Peacock and BPJ will determine whether or not the 27 states that have laws on the books protecting women's sports can continue to do so. In all likelihood, what will be decided is whether or not those laws are constitutional. In all likelihood, what will not be decided is whether the 23 states that do not have laws on the books protecting women's sports, states like California and Colorado, where I live, it will in all likelihood, not require that those states protect women's sports and uphold Title IX.
So in other words, it's not really going to do anything for us. So in the blue states, it's about can a state protect girls' sports, not must a state protect girls' sports. So there's a big difference there. So even though the Idaho case is out of the Ninth Circuit, I mean, Washington State is very unlikely to sort of pass a law saying, you know, boys can't compete in girls' sports. Now, I do wonder, and I think this is something for people who are much better at legal analysis than I am, if voters here, via initiative in November, pass a law protecting girls' sports, then we de facto passed a law protecting girls' sports. So what if SCOTUS doesn't rule the way I hope and I think that they will rule in the West Virginia and the Idaho case? Then maybe it could impact us, right? But in all likelihood, what's going to have to happen in the state of Washington is the voters are going to have to make a decision on this. We know that when these two cases were being argued in D.C., some of the girls from Washington State who have been working hard and advocating for their own interests, Frances Stout and Annalee Wilson, were in Washington, D.C., outside of SCOTUS, to make their voices heard. They've been very, very active in the Let's Go Washington campaign to protect girls' sports, and for that matter, to protect parental rights. But man, it is an uphill battle, which is so crazy because this is an 80% issue, right? But, you know, I think they've raised about $1 million already, the No Hate in Washington State campaign, because they think it's hateful for girls to say, hey, we don't want to compete against boys. They've raised like $1 million from the likes of the Washington Education Association and the ACLU and other far left interests. And they have no problem using that money to lie. It's very hard to compete against an immoral enemy. You know, the big lie that they've decided to go with is that protecting girls' sports here would mean invasive genital exams for girls, which has been debunked 1 million times, but they don't care. And there is no sort of rule that they have to tell the truth in political advertisement. So they're going to push that because the other argument would be, yeah, boys should be able to compete against girls. And that's not a popular argument. So they're not going to argue this on the merits and make the argument about here's why males who are bigger, faster, stronger should be able to crush girls in athletic competition and take home state titles, which they do on a regular basis in Washington. I think there's one track athlete who's taken home like 3 or more state titles because it's a boy, right? So they can't win on that argument. So they have to come up with the most fear-mongering, horrible, awful scenario if girls' sports are protected. But then you go back 20 odd years, as we've been discussing, and Democrats were all about Title IX. They were all about protecting girls' sports and creating these opportunities for women and girls. Patty Murray, you could play her comments from 20 years ago And it's like she's advocating for what we're advocating for today. So the SCOTUS rulings, don't get me wrong, are important, right? Because they're going to basically green light any state to be able to say, no, boys can't compete against girls. But that doesn't mean a whole lot for us here. Hopefully it'll create some new attention to the issue that we can then say, hey, we've got this initiative on the ballot. And what I will say to whoever might be listening is they need money. You know, it's not my job to raise money for Let's Go Washington and for the campaign. But you've got the other side raising $1 million. They'll probably spend, I would guess, 5 to 10 million on this by the time all is said and done. For outside interests, for anyone who cares about this issue across the country, which is the women's rights issue of a generation, Washington voters are going to be the first ones to weigh in on it. And if we can protect girls' sports here, we can protect girls' sports everywhere. I cannot understate the criticality of the initiative passing here in one of the deepest blue states in the nation and the domino effect that that could have. But it's going to take money to do it. It's going to take a robust effort to combat the lies and the disinformation from the media. You have this whole media ecosystem that will just run with this debunked lie that, oh yeah, girls might have to pull down their drawers and have some rando stranger check their genitalia, which is just wild. So I know that as far as fundraising goes, the initiative backers have raised far less money than those who are opposed to the initiatives. And money is the mother's milk of politics. All right, coming up next, we have an update on the efforts to crack down on the sex trade on Aurora Avenue in Seattle. The feds just making stuff happen. First, summer means a laundry list of to-do items inside and outside your home. I don't know about you. I don't want to spend my summer to doing a to-do list, not one bit. So Valentine Roofing can help you make sure the outside of your home looks fantastic for summer gatherings, barbecues, whatever it is, or just you lounging on your own deck, right? Which I did yesterday. But I'm always like, where are the spiders? But you know what takes care of some spiders and spider webs? Pressure washer. I'm in favor of spider murder. I know some people are opposed to that. Perfectly fine with it. So hire Valentine Roofing to clean the exterior of your home, clean your roof, even replace your roof if you think it might be time. And they have just a wonderful track record, exceptional customer service, seamless communication, meticulous cleanup, and they really will go the extra mile for you. And right now, let's say you need a new roof and you're like dreading that expense. Well, right now, Valentine is offering qualified homeowners $0 down and 0% financing with 6 months deferred interest. When paid in full within the promotional period, financing is subject to approved credit, but I think that's a great option if you need a new roof. So call 206 Roofing, schedule a free estimate today. That's 206 Roofing. Make sure you tell them you heard about them right here on Undivided. All right. So on the show earlier this week, we showed you this video from our friend Katie Davis Court. Katie was up on Aurora Avenue North in Seattle, and she got, do you have this video, Daryl? She got this video of HSI, Homeland Security Investigations, out making stops, pulling people out of vehicles. And this is in the area where there has been a ton of prostitution, drug dealing, gang wars, shootouts, and all of these things. And the point that I made is HSI wouldn't be up there if there weren't illegals. They have no, you know, they can't just go out and arrest prostitutes. They can't just go out and arrest people who, you know, shoot up the neighborhood, because it has to have a federal immigration nexus. And so what I said is just their presence out there is absolutely proof that there's illegal aliens who are part of and contributing to that violent sex trade. And thank God that HSI is willing to do its job in Seattle, even though Seattle makes it as difficult as humanly possible. So Katie Davis Court had a great follow-up talking about what the result of the HSI presence up there is. This from the Post Millennial. ICE Seattle arrests 4 Mexican illegal aliens during Aurora Avenue operation as police crack down on open-air sex trafficking. Gee, I am so shocked that illegal aliens are from Mexico, probably with ties to the cartel, are up there participating in all of this. So she had these details on those arrested. Emmanuel Perez Martinez, 33, of Mexico. He's pending voluntary departure to Mexico. Juan Ruiz Perez, 61, of Mexico. He is being detained at the Northwest ICE Processing Center pending return to Mexico. Jose Gutierrez Villanueva, 24, of Mexico. He's being detained at the ICE Processing Center pending an immigration hearing. And also, I think this is Jose Gutierrez Diaz, so same first name, different last name. of Mexico. He will be detained at the Northwest ICE Processing Center pending voluntary departure to Mexico. She notes that ICE did not disclose whether these subjects have any criminal histories besides their unlawful status in the U.S. However, they're up in the area of high prostitution, drug dealing, gang violence, shootouts. So, I mean, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to believe that they might have had some nexus to the criminal activity that's been occurring up there. Now, I want to follow up on something else, and this just drives me bananas. So we played video the other day of SPD and FBI out on Aurora. So this is after community members, you know, they were out and they were marching and they demanded action. And the mayor of Seattle, I think, had to listen, and the city attorney had to listen because the World Cup is coming up. It just all got too embarrassing for the city not to do anything about it. And so I was like, great, they're cooperating with the federal government and the FBI. And I think that's a wonderful thing, because especially in sex trafficking and human trafficking operations, there's no doubt that there's going to be some sort of transfer of people across state lines, for instance. And that's where the FBI comes in. And I think the FBI has additional tools they can bring to bear in an investigation. There are additional bodies for a Seattle Police Department that really is short-staffed and unable to dedicate resources properly to this area. And then also, if you can get some of these people on federal crimes as opposed to state crimes, we know damn well that they're going to get absolutely more time in a federal prison than they would if they go down on state charges. So that video came out, and I had to revisit, because I didn't see this at the time, but this bothers the hell out of me. So the Seattle Police Department put out a post on its blotter. So the Seattle Police Department has like a blog it runs, talking about that exact operation you saw on video there. It says weekend outreach results in 13 women and children receiving services and 6 suspects arrested. This weekend, Seattle Police Department led a coalition of public safety partners and service providers in coordinated outreach efforts focused on survivor support, voluntary service connections, and accountability for those responsible for trafficking and exploitation. And I was reading that night, that coalition of public safety partners was interesting. The coalition of public safety partners. I was like, are they going to give the feds any credit for this? Are they going to give the feds any credit? Guys, this whole blog, okay? I show you the whole thing. Nowhere in the whole blog does it mention FBI. It doesn't even mention federal partners. They gave them zero credit whatsoever. It talks about Mayor Wilson, Chief Sean Barnes, the Seattle City Attorney. It even shouts out the Human Services Department, which sent out legal advocates, community-based responders. I mean, it literally names every single element of this operation besides the freaking federal government. It's the worst. Like, police departments being political is the worst, because then you know that public safety is political. And to be clear, this isn't the police department. This is the police department under the thumb of a socialist mayor who hates the president and needs to make very clear that they're not going to cooperate with the federal government, even though we have them on camera cooperating with the federal government. They're out there together, working together to save women, to save minors, to get drugs and drug traffickers and human traffickers off the street. Yet the TDS runs so deep, they can't even celebrate that. They can't even thank the FBI, thank you for the help in saving women. And the FBI wasn't even out there doing, they're not doing immigration anything. But of course, what, they think Seattleites are too stupid to be able to differentiate? Like, why would you work with Donald Trump's FBI? How could you do that? And probably there would be some Seattleites who would react in that way when they're just out there rescuing women and girls, and the Seattle Police Department can't give them 1 ounce of credit, not one sentence, not one word, nothing. It's just outrageous. Also, I was noticing when I went to the blotter, they still have like pinned. So it's like basically kind of a news site, right? And they release articles every day just on updating on crimes. But the pinned article is like an article from a year ago setting, we want to be clear about, we don't cooperate with the feds on ICE or whatever, on immigration. And it's been pinned there for like a year. It's so deranged. And look, they went out there and got 4 Mexican illegal aliens who are up there in this area off the streets. Again, you should be thanking them. I'm not going to go that far. I don't expect them to thank ICE for deporting illegals. But thanking the FBI for helping with sex trafficking victims, like, come on. We can do that, right? And I also just want to reiterate, this is all the result of citizens speaking up, citizens making their voice heard, and the type of citizens who usually don't get involved and don't get engaged. And that's what we've seen in North Seattle. And look, I know a lot of people are saying, yeah, but who'd they vote for? I get it. Yeah, a lot of them probably vote for Democrats. It is Seattle after all. But if you don't give any sort of grace or room for people to change their minds and for people to demand better safety, regardless of what their politics are, then nothing is going to get better. So I don't really care who the people in that crowd voted for. What I care is that they're standing up for themselves, that they're taking action, they're making their voice heard. And as a result, in this situation, they're going to save lives. Them speaking out is going to save lives. It's going to save women. It's going to save girls. It's going to save people from being shot, businesses from closing down. And so I give them a lot of credit for that. All right, coming up next in our segment, Unbelievable, a big story out from the Center Square suggests that the Attorney General's office is not handling public records requests appropriately. We'll dive into it because you're probably going to see it all over social media today. And I'll also read you what the Attorney General's office told me about the whole ordeal. First, if you are a small to mid-sized landlord in the state of Washington, so maybe you got one rental unit, just a source of income, maybe you're a retiree or you've got 12, they can help you on an individual basis, make sure that you're keeping up to date with all the changing housing policies, which changes every single year, all the time, on the city level, county level, state level. But they can also help advocate for your interests in Olympia, which, I mean, housing providers need that right now. So part of your dues as a dues-paying member goes to their advocacy in Olympia. And also, they are on the front lines of fighting for property rights. They've got some key cases we've talked about on the show, and they've been wonderful supporters of our show now for a couple years. So rhawa.org, rhawa.org. If you are a landlord in the state of Washington, you need to be a member. Don't wait a second longer. rhawa.org. And with that, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Daryl's the MVP today. I was like, I'm literally about to throw up before the show. You know when you have like that moment where like saliva rushes into your mouth? For some reason, we're like a minute from air, and I'm like, not TMI, but we're all friends here by now. I was like, Daryl, I have Tums in my bag. Go get it for me. Deliver me some Tums. Thanks, Daryl. Appreciate it. True friend. What am I talking about? Ah, yes, the news. So you recall, this is back in April, I believe. The Center Square had a couple stories back to back, but they'd filed a public records request with the state, basically seeking information and communications between the legislature and the AG's office about their new income tax and the income tax on millionaires. And a couple interesting things came out of it. First of all, collusion, I think, between the AG's office and Senator Jamie Peterson and other Democrats to try to violate, really, our state constitution, but also the fact that that was the goal, is to overturn, you know, 100 years of precedent and try to get through what is an unconstitutional income tax. So this was just some clips from the story that aired back in April from the Center Square. The Washington Attorney General and Democratic leaders plotted how to overturn a nearly century-old decision that banned income taxes in the state. And it had this email from Senator Jamie Peterson that said, I would like to force the Washington Supreme Court to reconsider its case law that considers income to be property. And he's sort of conspiring behind the scenes. And there's a lot of good information that came out as a result of this nearly 1,000-page trove of public records that Center Square got its hands on. Now, something interesting has happened. So, and this is pretty common in the media, where you do a public records request, you get this great exclusive, and then other people will then request the records that you got because they don't want to credit you. I mean, other members of the media, right? They don't want to credit you, especially if it's the Center Square, and they think that, oh, you know, I can't credit the Center Square. And so like the Seattle Times, for instance, they'd go out and they'd get their own records, or private citizens might go out and get their own records. So after the Center Square aired this story, other people asked for the, you know, put in a very similar request, but what they got in response was different, which is not okay. It's not how this is supposed to work. So this from the Center Square today. The release of sensitive internal communications between the Washington State Attorney General's office and lawmakers on how to push forward a millionaire's tax appeared to be on the fly and discriminatory, with some getting all the documents and others receiving heavily redacted versions records obtained by the Center Square and interviews show. The records release raises questions about the AGO's ability to fairly abide by the state's transparency laws and whether they violated attorney-client privilege. The Center Square and a competing news organization received records the office later said were confidential attorney-client records, while opponents of the tax and others obtained only redacted documents. Okay, so there's two issues at play here. People getting different records and people getting records that were redacted for attorney-client privilege that weren't redacted as attorney-client privilege for other requesters. So it says on April 22nd, the Center Square published an exclusive story based on documents obtained through a public records request. The 988 pages were entirely unredacted, okay? So the Center Square's records that it got, entirely unredacted. 2 days after their story was published, Let's Go Washington, which is running the initiative to repeal the income tax, filed a records request seeking the same records. The request was acknowledged by the AGO's public records office. On May 21st, Let's Go Washington received 562 heavily redacted pages. So that's interesting. Center Square gets 988, no redactions at all. Let's Go Washington gets 562 heavily redacted pages. And I just want to keep reading on that. Another requester, Ellen Engel, submitted on April 27th the request using almost identical language in the same time frame as the Center Square. His request was acknowledged on May 4th, and a batch of records was provided on May 28th. Although the 436-page document did not redact anything, it also did not contain numerous records cited in the Center Square's April 20th story. So either this is intentional, depending on the requester, or it's an absolute disaster, and they're not using any sort of consistent method to make sure that they're releasing all requested records. Either way, it's a problem, and either way, it seems to be a violation of the Public Records Act. And I almost think if it's incompetence, that's even worse, you know, in a sense, because how many records requests have they just willy-nilly fulfilled and you're not actually getting all the documents that might be responsive to the request? It's very interesting. Now, this next accusation from the Center Square is something that the Attorney General's office is going to deny momentarily in their email to me. But basically, the Center Square contends that they were told, basically, oh, the documents we gave you should have been redacted and they weren't, and we want them back. Essentially. So it says on April 30th, Center Square was contacted by a public records person with the AGO's office who wrote in an email that the 988-page document contains attorney-client privilege work product that should have been redacted. This is a notice that disclosure by our office was inadvertent and does not constitute waiving any privilege. It says it's unclear why the records the office claims are attorney-client communications were released unredacted. According to a March 27th email obtained by the Center Square, AGO paralegal Michelle Sanchez sent Assistant Attorney General Spencer Coates suggested redactions to records requested by the Center Square. Separately, the Secretary of State released records to the Center Square after the AGO's release, but asked the news organization to delete them because the office deemed them attorney-client records. The Center Square declined, finding the records newsworthy and important for the public to know. Now, I've filed probably 1,000 public records requests in my career. I will say it has happened to me before that they said, hey, we were supposed to redact this and we didn't. And they have that line saying that this is a notice that disclosure was inadvertent, does not constitute waiving of any sort of privilege. But I've never had anybody ask for them back, because that would just be a stupid thing to do. There's no law saying that we have to give them back. We already got them. We're members of the media. And if we got them, we're not going to give them back. And so, of course, the Center Square didn't give them back. But I reached out to the AG's office this morning and I just said, hey, do you have any comment on this? Because I think this is going to become very problematic for the AG's office. Because our public records laws are pretty strict, and they're strict for a reason, right? So that there's punishments for agencies that don't provide information to the public and don't honor the spirit of transparency. I mean, I have that public records case against the city of Seattle that we won in the Court of Appeals. And it doesn't have to be malicious. You can be sued for violating the Public Records Act, even if you did something on accident. And that's because it's important, you know, to do this methodically and to be transparent. So Mike Folk, who is the spokesperson for the Attorney General's office. I'm just going to read his email to you. He said, the story misrepresents what happened with the records requests. We did not assert after-the-fact privilege on the documents that were released in error. We only added language acknowledging the error. We did not attempt to claw them back or withhold them from anyone else. Everyone who asked for those records got what Martinell got. There were 988 pages released in error without redactions. That same package of 988 pages were released to anyone who asked for them subsequent to the errant release. We inadvertently released records that the law clearly states that we could, and ethics say should, withhold from public release. There was no mid-course change of direction done on the fly or in any other matter. We told Martinell his presumptions were incorrect. Now, there's a couple things that are still confusing to me, because as I read earlier, it wasn't just the redaction issue. It wasn't just, because I don't really want to give the AG's office the benefit of the doubt, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility that they realized after the fact we should have redacted this. So the next time somebody requested it, they did the redactions, and then they notified the Center Square, hey, we were supposed to redact this. We didn't. We're just notifying you of that. But what doesn't make sense to me, and I don't think what Mike Folk's email explains, and I'll ask him for clarification, is the discrepancy in the number of pages. Like, how can Let's Go Washington have a similar or exactly the same request and get 562 pages? That's like almost half of what the Center Square got. And then this other guy, a private citizen, got 436 pages, and specifically it didn't contain numerous records cited in the Center Square's April 20th story. So there's a lot that the Attorney General's office has to explain here. But I think this is why, you know, public record stuff, I get it. Sometimes it can be in the weeds and sometimes it can be boring, right? But this is about the people's right to know what's happening behind the scenes and the discussions that are going into all these really critical decisions that impact your lives. And in our state, we have the right to know these things. We have the right to see their emails. We have the right to see their text messages. I think they overredact things, but they'll redact what is attorney-client privilege or whatever it is. And, you know, during my public records lawsuit against the city of Seattle, do you think the legacy media had my back in that? Do you think that they admonished the city of Seattle for withholding records from me for an insane number of days until after an election? No, because I'm their competition, right? I'm critical of them. So they're not going to try to bolster or support my public records case. And to me, that just diminishes transparency for everyone. It's like we all have to be on the side of pushing for transparency, pushing for accountability, even if we don't like each other, right? And when the Seattle Times has had lawsuits against Seattle, like when the Seattle Times had lawsuits about the missing text messages in CHOP and the Summer of Love, do you think I'm like, nah, I'm not going to cover that because I hate the Seattle Times? No, I hate the Seattle Times, but yeah, there were missing messages. It was a very serious situation. And damn right, the media should have sued over it. And the media did sue over it. And the media ended up getting money as a result of it. So that's part of it, is like this picking and choosing of, oh, Brandy's, is it Brandy who was wronged by the Public Records Act? Or is it the Seattle Times who was wronged? Because the Seattle Times being wrong. Look, every citizen has the same rights under the Public Records Act. It has nothing to do with whether you're a member of the media. Whether I do a request or you do a request, it must be treated the same. It must be treated with the same seriousness by the letter of the law and in the interest of transparency. And anytime it's not, that needs to be treated seriously by the press so that the government is held accountable for hiding things from the public. So we will follow back up with the AG's office and see what's happening here. But especially on this issue, where we already know they were cooking behind the scenes and how to collude with each other to violate the state constitution and pass an income tax, better believe that we're going to demand the utmost transparency from them. All right, coming up next, we'll get to our segment of Florida Report. First, a whole bunch of you have taken the First Mark Challenge, and you're saving hundreds of dollars a month, thousands of dollars a year on your insurance, which is fantastic. And I think the best part about First Mark, honestly, that aside, is the customer service. You pick up the phone, they answer. Not a phone tree, not a recording, not someone in another country who you can't understand. No offense. It's someone right here. Daryl's looking at me. I mean, come on. Am I wrong? It's someone right here in Washington State. Picks up the phone. Oh, hi, Brandy. How are you today? And it's just so nice. It's so different. So I just love that. And they're proactive about kind of re-upping your insurance and making sure they go out every year, see if they can get you a better deal, see if you have the right insurance for you. So the customer service is just, that alone is worth it to me. FirstMarkInsurance.com. FirstMarkInsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right. It is Thursday. That's when we go all the way to Florida and check in on what's happening in the Sunshine State. It is our segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
You look gorgeous today. Wow. You look like a beach siren.
You know, with this humidity, this is probably how my hair is going to look for the next 6 months.
Looks great. I noticed that I compliment you a lot on the show, and I don't really get any compliments in return, but it's fine. It's fine.
Well, you know, you always look beautiful.
Thank you. So. Yeah, I do know that. All right, a little drama in the GOP in Florida. So Byron Donalds is like Trump's pick to replace Ron DeSantis as governor of Florida. And you would think, you know, who Trump selects is going to be the person who wins. And that's probably the case with Byron Donalds. But there are some Republicans who are not so happy with this choice and not so happy with some of the things that Byron Donalds is doing. Explain.
Yeah, so as we get closer to the primaries, it's starting to just kind of feel like Byron Donalds is just up for a coronation. Like he's such a front runner that none of these other candidates are getting any sort of chance, screen time, whatever have you. It's if you don't know who they are and you haven't gone looking, like you'll just hear Byron Donalds and maybe not even show up to vote in the primaries because he's clearly going to win. Mm-hmm. So in addition to that, he's also kind of garnered a reputation of not wanting to debate anybody, which has become kind of a problem for voters because one of the best ways to get to know a candidate is through the debate cycles.
Yeah, this always bothered me. So he's basically refused to debate. And we're talking about primary debate. So on stage with other Republicans, I imagine he would debate in the general election. I don't know, maybe not if he's way ahead. I don't know. But, you know, there are some, to your point, I mean, he's the front runner, but like Lieutenant Governor Jay Collins is running. People have probably heard the name James Fishback. He's another one who's got some traction amongst Republicans. But the party set this threshold of, okay, as a party, the only Republicans who could debate in a primary debate have to meet this 10-10-10 threshold to qualify. So what is that threshold?
The 10-10-10 threshold is basically would include 10% of the support within the party, like the internal party.
Okay, like internal polling within the party.
Polling in the party. $10 million in contributions and 10,000 individual donors.
Okay, and of the 11 Republicans running in the governor's race, how many have met that threshold?
Just Byron.
Interesting. So they're saying we're not going to even have a debate because he's the only one who's met this self-imposed, like, brand new threshold?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And it's become kind of a thing where that threshold has nothing to do with voters in anybody's opinion because we're not the ones doing the polls. I mean, the qualifications just ended like 2 days ago for who could be in the primaries.
They can all be in the primaries, but who could be in the debates? Yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Go ahead.
The primary window is closed. Mm. So up until just a few days ago, I could have put my name on something and maybe I should have. But yeah, so this has been something that you and I have been talking about for a few months because it's kind of been brewing, but it's kind of coming to a head. DeSantis has been getting asked in press conferences about this particular situation in the GOP.
Yeah, here's DeSantis.
Yeah, there should be a debate. They said they were going to do a debate. They didn't put out the criteria publicly. I don't think the RPOF ever voted on any type of criteria. I've heard secondhand what the criteria was. I wouldn't have qualified when I ran in 18. It's counterproductive when you try to engineer an outcome because you need a coalition of voters to do well. And this may be a tough cycle for Republicans if you look at some of the indicators, the way things are trending. And so having an open process and having people be able to have their say is always better than to try to engineer an outcome. So what the party should be doing is doing what's in the best interest of Republican voters. To do those types of criteria, I think ultimately is counterproductive. I think you alienate people for no reason. And look, we've had a great run in Florida. But part of it is, you know, we've really, you know, I think respected the voters and worked really hard to build that trust and support that has seen us go from 300,000 more registered Democrats when I got elected in 18 to now 1.5 million more registered Republicans.
I agree with him 100% because yeah. It is about the voters and respecting the voters, and people do not like engineered, even if Byron, you know, on his own merits is ahead and all of those things, people don't like to feel like there's this artificial control over their choices. I mean, look at Kamala Harris, right? Being anointed the Democratic nominee for president. What does Byron Donald say about this criticism?
He's kind of doubled down. Every time he's asked, he's just like, I'm not going to debate people. I'm not going to raise up my competition. Mm. There's a quote. He says, I actually love a good debate, but what we're not going to do is we're not going to elevate campaigns that have not demonstrated ability to be viable on their own.
And I understand that as well, right? Is if you have someone who, you know, hasn't been putting in the time, the energy, the campaign, or whatever it is, or doesn't have as much name recognition, by sharing a stage with them as the front runner, you are inflated, you are giving them an opportunity, but you have to balance that against respect for voters and the ability to shine, the ability to explain your policies and to show that you can be a leader. So I guess as a member of the press, I'm always going to be opposed to people who try to duck debates. It happens a lot here with Democrats in Washington State because they're like, why do I have to debate this Republican? I'm going to win anyway. So they always try to get out of debates, and sometimes they're successful. Just wild.
Yeah. But in a state like Florida, I mean, when it comes down to the general election, if he does debate, let's hope he can stand on his own two feet, because a lot of people down here think he's not debating because he's more of a puppet than he is like his own politician with his own policies and understanding of things. Yeah. So he's not really putting himself in a good position by not even debating with the next front runner.
Yeah. You know? And I mean, Ron DeSantis is an excellent debater. I mean, his debate with Gavin Newsom is one of my all time favorite political debate moments, when he holds up the poop map of California. And so maybe Byron's like, I can't debate like that. And he's just more, I could do a Fox News interview, but I can't stand up and debate on the merits. So I guess we will see. All right. Sayonara, Alligator Alcatraz. So this temporary dubbed Alligator Alcatraz ICE processing center in the Florida Everglades closing today officially?
Yeah. So it has been the last person, the last detainee has left the building. So now they will be decommissioning, taking it apart. There was a press conference just this morning. Tom Holman was there. DeSantis was there, just kind of talking about the success of it, what's going to happen moving forward, what's going to happen with the site, because, of course, a lot of people's biggest argument was the environmental impacts of Alligator Alcatraz, et cetera.
So let's talk first about Tom Holman. He was very happy with, and this really could only exist and function the way it did, with the cooperation between the federal government and the state of Florida.
When the president of the United States, Donald Trump, came in office, he declared a national emergency. Governor DeSantis was on the phone with me within days. Understanding the president declared a national emergency, how can I help? We had many discussions, and he did. He stepped up in a time of need, and he continues to step up. Today doesn't end the cooperation. He told you a few minutes ago, his 287G numbers are beyond any other state in the country, by far. Which means what? That means more criminal aliens are off the street in your neighborhoods in the state of Florida, making Florida safer, making this country safer. 50 states in this nation, Governor DeSantis accounts for 40% of all 287G arrests. Governor DeSantis did a good job, and he's going to continue doing what he's doing to help us make this country safe again. This is an ended relationship. This is a continuation.
Yeah, so the 287G arrest, it's when law enforcement officers, like local, deputized to act in like basically an ICE capacity. So 40% in Florida, they're like, we're helping ICE round them up. And so that's why they needed an extra facility. DeSantis, the environmental impact was a big conversation at the beginning. Like, hey, it was already like a decommissioned airport or something.
It was a working airport for training. It's not a... there's no terminals there for people to get in and out. It's a training airport for commercial airlines, fighter jets, things like that. It's just like a, it was a pre-existing location.
They didn't like pave paradise and put up a parking lot. Like it was already there. But at the same time, they had a lot of activity in the area. So here's DeSantis on what they're going to do to sort of put it back the way it was.
There were discussions about if this strip, if you just took everything out, would that meaningfully aid Everglades restoration? And I think the view was that it really wouldn't make a huge impact. It would be costly. So I'm not sure that that's something certainly our administration is going to push. It was fine the way it was. If I thought somehow uprooting all this concrete would be the key to, you know, really good Everglades restoration, I would support that. I just, that's not really been, I think, the view of a lot of people that have looked at it.
It was there before, so they can take down what they brought in to have the ice facilities, but the pavement is going to stay there. So,
yeah.
All right. Oh, I was hoping to visit Alligator Alcatraz one time on my trip to Florida, but no such. I guess we can visit the site.
I was wondering who got the sign, the Alligator Alcatraz green sign that was on the side of the highway.
Somebody heeded that. Somebody took that 100%. All right, Miranda, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
I don't like the no debate thing. I don't know. I mean, I don't like somebody just assuming that they're going to win and not making the case to voters. So I asked you guys in our daily subscriber show poll how you feel about it. So I had to be a little specific on this poll because, like, look, do I think, like, I don't know, every city council candidate or every school board candidate should be required to debate? Probably not. But I said, should candidates for higher office, like president, vice president, Congress, and governor, be required to participate in at least one debate? Before we get to what subscribers said on Patreon, Locals, and X, Daryl Davis, what say you? And it has been so nice to have you. Thank you for filling in for Nicole this week.
Hey, thanks for having me, Brandy.
Of course.
And thanks, chat. You guys are very nice.
Yes. Oh, are they being nice to you?
Yeah.
Better be nice to you.
No, they're nice. I would say yes. My only reservation, because, you know, I always got to have a reservation.
Sure. Devil's advocate.
Who's moderating it? Where's it going to be at?
Always.
Who decides the questions?
Mm-hmm.
So when it's mandated like that, I just feel like there's, I don't know.
Yep.
Who mandates it?
Right, because they could say, all right, well, my wife is going to have a debate and I'll participate in that one, but not. Most states have some sort of debate coalition like ours does. But in the last 3 or 4 years, as Democrats have gotten more of a majority, they've declined to participate in what used to be like a standard, okay, the debate coalition, which is a coalition of all the mainstream legacy outlets. I used to, you know, moderate all the big debates, like the governor's debates, congressional debates. Before I was rejected from by my friends in the legacy media for leaving. That makes sense. That's fine. I do my opinion now. I don't think I should be able to moderate what is supposed to be like maybe a debate where it's all candidates of the same party.
Right.
You know, that's different, right?
Yeah.
But I don't think I should be able to moderate a debate between like Bob Ferguson and his next opponent.
No.
I don't think that would be fun. But yeah, I understand the issue. I think generally speaking, I say yes.
Yeah.
But you'd have to, I agree, you'd have to work out some of those kinks. 95% of you agree, yes, at least one. Steve says, as long as the moderator is neutral for the whole thing. James says 100% they should. It's the only way to get a somewhat accurate picture of the candidates that are not spun or doctored in some way. And it's a good way to spot media bias and moderation. I think it also shows how they operate under pressure is like, and that's different than a lot of other scenarios. How well can you articulate your policies and how can you operate under pressure?
Yeah.
And, you know, Bob Ferguson, for instance.
Oh, man, the Reichert, it was rough.
It
was rough.
Under pressure, yes.
And
Bob's like a seasoned debater.
Yeah.
I didn't think he did great either. But for instance, now he won't answer questions from the media.
Right.
And it's like, okay, why are you not doing that? You can't just stand up and answer, like have press conferences on a regular basis. Jay Smith over on Locals says, I think the minimum should be at least two, one with questions from the public versus staged, prearranged talking points. I also like the idea of like a town hall style questions from the public, but then who's screening the questions from the public? You know what I mean? Because usually when they do that, like the CNN does the town hall, they're like, now we're going to hear from Joe in Iowa. And Joe stands up and it's like, okay, clearly that's Joe's been screened, right? Do they know what he's going to, why are you laughing at my Joe from Iowa?
No, I mean, yeah. It's,
Joe Schmo
Joe's a paid actor.
From Iowa. Totally paid. paid actor, 100%. I just wanted to see if there were any responses on X quick before I... It's not loading, though, but okay, I'll read them later. All right, one other national story I want to get to because it's starting today. So the Great American State Fair is going to be happening in D.C., running, I believe, through the 4th of July. And it's being described as sort of a modern-day, like, World's Fair, 2 weeks long. Kicks off today, runs past the 4th of July weekend, and it's to mark the nation's 250th birthday. And it's going to be sort of a display of all 50 states. And, like, what's special about them? Except, of course, and you guys probably heard this, I just want to talk about it today since it's starting today. At least six states have bowed out of Trump's Great American State Fair. Daryl, don't look at it. I want you to guess the six states, or at least, like, can you guess two of them? That won't
California.
Go. Okay.
Washington.
Okay.
California's New York. California's not.
I think they are participating. Last check.
Oh, man.
Go south of us.
South. Oh, Oregon.
Yeah.
Of course.
So and this might, they might have added to the list.
California
at one point
broke
it was
from the Cascadia.
I feel like California is participating. Huh. It says officials from Oregon, Washington, Massachusetts, Illinois, North Carolina, and wow. Connecticut declined an invitation to showcase their states, some of them for financial reasons. So some of them just like didn't want to spend any money on it, which I think is crazy. Like the North Carolina one is crazy to me.
Yeah.
Why would North Carolina not
They're
go?
They're doing all right.
But you know that ours is full-blown TDS. Yeah. Like, we're absolutely... Let me see here quick, because you're right. Is California left off this list? California, Great American... I know this is really exciting podcasting, but I just... Now I'm like, did CNN get this wrong? Should I not have trusted CNN? I don't know. I don't see that on there. No. Somebody will tell me if I'm wrong. But yeah, I mean, that's ridiculous. But it does say that... all 50 states and territories will be represented even if some states don't provide input, and details are still being actively finalized. This was an article from a couple days ago. What we can say is that every state's story will be told in a way that's authentic to its people, history, and culture, whether represented by a governor's office, a tourism board, or a beloved state company or organization, every community will be celebrated. So even if our state's like, TDS, they're still going to have a little booth for us, which is nice. I think that they should... do it. I think Trump should do it. They should decide what like Washington's is going to look like. Oh. It'll be like a model, you know, like the models you made when you were a kid.
So
like a half a,
actually,
and it'll show Chaz Chop in it.
I had
the social, and use needles in human feces.
Oh yeah.
We're like, well, yes.
So we had in Connecticut, because I did my fourth grade in Connecticut, and then our capstone project is a state in the box. So you
state in a box.
You draw a state out of a box.
Okay.
And then you have like a, what's it called? A diorama of that state.
I love
My
that.
State was Oregon. So I got the state bird and I found a quarter from Oregon and got their flag and then just had a little report about
love
it.
Love that.
And that was my state. So I think Trump should do a state in the box.
100%. It'll got like a used needle stuck into a pile of human feces.
There you go.
Chaz Chop. Right? And then we'll put Mount Rainier in the
background
because the mountain didn't do anything wrong.
The mountain hasn't
done anything wrong, right?
Yeah.
So we could come up with something
Maybe
creative.
Our waterfront, too.
It's, let's go down
beautiful.
There. Should we just go and set up Washington's box thing? I think that would be fun.
Beautiful Mount Rainier.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Maybe we'll even, you know, do the vinegar and baking soda and make it erupt.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Perfect. I think I would remember how to do that. All right, we'll get to comments from the live stream coming up next. I don't know if that's, is that how what it sounds like when it erupts? I wasn't here during Mount St. Helens. Most investors right now focused on AI, crypto, tech. The real story, though, happening in energy. Energy impacts like every facet of our lives, and your advisor should be focused on it if they're not already, because you cannot underestimate right now energy's impact on your portfolio. It impacts inflation, transportation, global markets, manufacturing. So if these oil supply disruptions continue, you need to be confident that your advisor and your portfolio are prepared. Reach out to our friend Zach Abraham at Boar Capital. Have him take a second look at your retirement portfolio for you, totally free. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. While you're there, you can find out how to follow his daily updates on social media and subscribe to his daily podcast. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. KnowYourRiskPodcast.com. Okay. All right. Lil Miss J does say, shout out to Daryl. And you'll be back Monday, Tuesday.
Yes.
you want to join us for comments.
Okay.
Because your shirt's so nice today.
Oh, thank you.
That's a real winner. I love that. Did your wife pick that out?
Yeah.
I'm going to say something that might offend you, but I do feel as if you've gotten more stylish since you've been with your wife.
I mean, it's a different style.
No. It's more stylish. You never had bad style.
Yeah.
It's just different.
It is. It's nice. Great. She works in fashion.
Yeah. Does she buy your clothes, like pick them out for you or like together?
I was there for this one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, I think it's really nice.
Yeah.
I like it. Sometimes when I put on a nice outfit, I'm like, oh, Daryl's wife would like this. I'm not using her name on the air, but.
Yeah.
Let's see. SCOTUS to rule on girls' sports. Grego, this isn't even an argument. I mean, seriously, the world is going mad. I agree.
Yeah. We got Wise Castle. If WA is first, then it will probably trigger a SCOTUS case because, you know, WA will not be willing to abide by a citizen initiative.
Yeah.
$30 car tax.
Yeah, no kidding. But also, they could wait 2 years and then change the law again.
Yeah.
But I honestly think Democrats should welcome it. If the voters are the ones to say no boys and girls sports, you can just say, voters decided. Now, you can get out from underneath this issue in a way that you have no culpability, so to speak. But I don't know. They never cease to amaze me. On the public records drama, Julie B. said, if a lawmaker asks for advice from the attorney general's office related to legislation, why would it be attorney-client privileged? Aren't the citizens the ultimate clients? I agree. It's my complaint about the attorney general's office and how it's structured. You cannot be the attorney for the government and be the attorney for the citizens.
Yeah.
Those two things cannot, it absolutely should be mutually exclusive.
Should be.
So I think they need two positions, like state's attorney and citizen's attorney or something like that. JMPNW. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. Okay. Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry.
It is not incompetence. It's intentional. I have seen the governor's office specifically not allow agencies to send out record requests without either the AG or government office reviewing and approving first.
Yeah. And I wanted to see, I did send that follow-up question to the AG's office because this all came out early this morning. So I didn't have a ton of time to go back and forth with them. But they do need to explain the discrepancy in number of records.
Right.
Maybe somebody, you know, filed a slightly different request. So I'm open to the possibilities. But
the Stephen House, G5S. This is a really good question here. Is someone going to compare the two releases and determine if the redactions were correct or hiding information?
Yes. So that's a good question.
Because like you said, is it because they just released the wrong thing or are they trying to bury stuff?
Well, now we know. But I feel like they'd be smarter than that because just because you put a black box over it for this person has it without a black box. So if you redacted something that wasn't attorney-client privilege and couldn't be argued as such, you're in hot water. So that doesn't, I mean, but again, would they do it? Sure. Remind me of me, says Washington's motto, selective privilege. Yeah, that's a good one.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you want to do Mo?
Yeah. From Florida Report, $10 million is huge.
Yeah, I said this to Miranda. Yeah. So the threshold.
That's a lot.
And look, Florida's a bigger state than Washington.
Mm-hmm.
$10 million for a gubernatorial candidate here would be huge at this stage to raise $10 million. Apparently, I mean, they had that threshold to participate in debates, and it's only one person who's reached it. So maybe it is kind of also huge in Florida, but
I feel like that disenfranchises people potentially.
Oh, 100%. You know, I do believe you need to show viability as a candidate.
Right.
And this same for coverage on our show. It's the same for debates. We've got to have some floor by which to judge whether you're a serious candidate who might be able to win.
We have Space Guy.
Yeah,
what's
but you
his
can't,
name?
Yeah, Good Space Guy.
Good Space
you
Guy.
You can't set the floor
Let's
too high,
Let's actually have
though.
Good Space Guy on Monday.
I don't think so, but thank you. De Pluribus Unum, I understand the 10%, but not the others. So you understand the polling.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, the polling is the one that makes the least sense to me, or obvious, honestly, because polling, who's conducting the poll?
Yeah.
What is the, yeah, I don't know.
Was it Milk E-Man?
89? Sure.
Okay.
I always read it Milkman, but yeah, there is an E in there,
There's an E in there.
Milky Man.
He doesn't want the chance to get a gotcha or a bad soundbite getting out.
Yeah, but that's politics.
That's politics.
Get over it. Michael O'Hagan. So have an open debate with the general public. Give the public the chance to debate him just for their peace of mind. Yeah, do some sort of town hall. Have people there to show that you can do it on your own.
Yep.
Like I'm hosting a town hall as a candidate and show them that you can answer questions and stand on your own 2 feet, as we were saying.
All right.
All right, Daryl, we'll see you Monday.
Signing out.
Beep. All right. If you are thinking about selling your home, even if that might be 6 months away or so, the very best thing you can do is reach out early to our friend Wes Jones at sellwithwes.com and get a lay of the land. There's a lot of people leaving the state right now, not as many coming in. So it might take a little more effort to get your home sold for top dollar, but it is still absolutely doable. Jim H. gives Wes Jones 5 stars. We packed our bags, hit the road to a new state, but we jump at the chance to work with Wes again in a heartbeat, called it a breezy walk in the park from beginning to end. Who calls home selling that? Wes must be that good, and he is. Go to sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com, and you can peruse some of the recent listings that have sold with Wes. So go from sell with Wes to sold with Wes, which is the goal, of course. And while you're there, contact Wes and say, hey, I'm thinking about selling my home. Tell me what the market is doing in my area. And he would be more than happy to do that, because it might just mean that, you know, you need to work a little more on staging, or you need to do a little more on the cosmetic upgrade front. But not only can he help you with that, he can even arrange it so you don't have to pay for those costs until closing, so you don't have to come out of pocket a bunch of money, which can be really stressful. So sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. It really just is a better way to sell your home. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. I almost hate to do this to you guys. After a great week, I almost hate to send you into the weekend with one of the last things you're hearing being the voice of former Governor Jay Inslee. I almost don't want to do it, but I got to.
So we have the problem statement, which is real clear, which is Donald Trump, given his cost, chaos, and corruption. And we have the answer, which is clean energy, which is abundantly available. And fortunately, it's happening. 90% of all of the new generating capacity in the United States last year was clean, renewable energy. If he'll just get out of the way and stop his insane and corrupt bargain to try to force this dirty energy down Americans' throat, we're paying way too much.
No governor in America single-handedly raised his citizens' energy costs more than Governor Jay Inslee. With his phony climate goals, he'll be off the earth by the time we reach the deadline for those goals, so he'll never have to answer for why they weren't achievable in the first place. This is the guy who passed the Climate Commitment Act, the single biggest driver, permanent driver of increased gas prices in the state of Washington. I mean, I don't know if he really believes what he's saying, or if he's just gotten away with the lies for so long, he figures, I'll just keep telling him. Unreal. I will say I got an answer from Milky Man. His last name's Milky with an E.
All right. He says
you can just say Milkman.
Okay.
And we have an answer. Daryl, right. Thank you. Thank you, guys. This has been today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Subscribers, I will see you on Sunday. We have a fantastic interview on Sunday for you with, dare I say, a music legend?
Wow.
Musical legend?
Sir Mix-a-Lot.
No, he does love me, though. At least he did at one point.
Nice.
Yeah, he used to love me. I don't know if that's
changed.
I
remember when we went to the State Fair, saw Sir Mix-a-Lot.
Yeah. Oh, he's a music legend, too. Yeah. Where are you at,
he's
Mix?
A local legend.
He used to send me nice compliments. Maybe I got too far right for him. I don't know.
Maybe.
Little band called Nirvana. You ever heard of them?
No way. Okay. That's it, though. That's the only spoiler? Or is Dirty Tease more of it?
I feel like people will guess. We're going to talk about politics.
No, it's not one-on-one.
Terrible. Why'd you have to end with that? Daryl, okay. All right.